welcome to episode 7 of Hits and Gigs. My name is Noah Sherman. With me, as always, Savik Panelik.
Good to be here.
Dan Rougeau.
Hey, guys.
And we have a special guest host this week. We're here with Andrew Ragnar.
Hello.
How are you, man?
Oh, I'm great. It's an honor to be among the stars.
Whoa, man. Dude, that's a little heavy. I don't know, man.
I like to get heavy right off the bat, so we can just have a good time.
I don't know if it's an honor as much as like a toil. It's like, oh no, we're here. Okay, so we got a really cool episode coming this week. We're in a new studio pretty much, right?
Yeah.
If you can call my bedroom a studio.
Well, I mean, you know, it's close. We got the echo closet.
Echo chamber.
Echo closet.
We got the soundproof curtains. It's all
nice.
We're good.
We've got the curtains records on the wall.
Yeah, I just moved to a new place like a couple weeks ago, and then Dan was in. Where'd you end up going? Chile?
I went to Chile.
Dan gets to fly for free. That's a.
Let's not talk about that.
Okay, we're not going to talk about it. So we're in this new place. We're no longer doing it at Humber's recording studio. But this week, we got some very special guests coming on. We have Mara Nesralla. Did I say it right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I said it right.
Good to go.
Okay. She was giving me crap before because I couldn't pronounce her last name right, but I think I got it.
Before, as in the
future, as in like before
the interview takes place later.
Don't worry about it. No, you didn't have to say that. Dan, what's your friend's name?
Melissa Payette.
Okay. And we also have Melissa Payette coming on the show. She is the editor in chief for Confront Magazine, and we're looking forward to that discussion.
It's gonna be a lot of fun.
It's gonna be really interesting.
Yeah. So before we get to the interviews, we were trying to kind of figure out a discussion point for today, and I was having a lot of trouble.
I had no idea what to talk about, man.
And then Ragnar saved the day. You came up with this article that you read. Where'd you read it?
I found it. I'm in a band called The Flow, Toronto group, and we're all talking always about how to try and promote ourselves online. And so the drummer of the band, Julian Clark, he's always quite savvy with these sort of things. He sent this article to all of us to try and get hip to, and it's called 7 Deadly Sins Musicians Are Committing on Facebook and Twitter. And I think a lot of this stuff, a lot of my friends on Facebook are doing.
Yeah, I'm definitely guilty of some of these things. I was reading through some of them before. Do you want to just start going through some of them? Who do them? Is there any particular one you want to start with? Or should we just go with number one?
Hey, man, I'm easy. Okay. What would you like to look at?
I'm good with the first one, because this is kind of like, this is something that I'm...
Yeah, the first one's really the most...
Yeah.
It's really the most important one out of all of them.
I'd say so, yeah. The first one is promoting without providing value. That's being like, you know, playing a show here, come.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of like that kind of thing. Like,
it's the thing we all see on Facebook all the time from everyone we know.
The only variety is come hang or see you there or hope to catch you there.
Yeah,
or,
it's,
and it's just differences
it's,
there.
I'm playing here, vote for me in this. Hey, I'm releasing this song. And it's just, it's a constant flow of the same stuff all the time.
It's, the article makes a point of saying that it's fine to do that still.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you have to.
It's like, wow, I sure love the Bad Plus. They have really funny posts about cats. It's like, no. Well, I mean, maybe. Fuck. Yeah. Maybe if they do. I don't actually know. But, I mean, I'm pretty sure they don't. Mm-hmm. But the post says that, you know, it's still important to do these things, like you said. But what you want to do is you want to break it up with, like, valuable pieces of information, right?
Yeah, finding ways to attach value to your
even taking something like this article and posting it on your artist page for people to read would be a great way of doing that. A thing I was talking with Ragnar about this earlier, found a big issue is so many musicians don't write anything. I find the pages that I visit the most are pages where it's a musician both promoting their stuff, showing you their music, and having like a blog.
There's
a couple really great music blogs out there, like Played Twice, Do the Math, Ethan Iverson's blog.
Oh yeah,
is absolutely fantastic. And
it's about math.
Yeah, it's about math. Yeah, but so many musicians just end up not giving anything that's useful to the audience.
It's very one-dimensional. Like
yeah,
it's
right. It turns out what it comes to being is that your friends aren't exactly promoting their business, but they're asking you for a favor. And yeah. as a business, yeah. you don't want to be doing... If I'm promoting my business, I don't want to be asking you for a favor. I need to give you a reason to be my client, you know?
Yeah,
to
absolutely.
To work for me. Mm-hmm. I want to show you why. And I think those blogs are a good example. But just to put, please come to my show and make it more of an individual perspective mm-hmm. instead of an actual packaged product, mm-hmm. which... totally gets thrown by the wayside because you're going for your friends and not your fans.
And yeah. a big part of this is, like, I find in the visual art side of things, a lot of artists have this down. Artists, like, visual artists are regularly writing essays and articles on taste or a particular aesthetic, and musicians don't do that. They just kind of rely on on their music. But I mean, you need something else. You got to show people that you're not just, you know, not just this one album. You got to give them something to want to check out your page for.
What's like a favorite of yours? Can you think of one off the top of your head?
Darby Bannard and John Link are two visual artists, and they both fairly regularly, at least a while ago it was regularly, post articles on, like, the ruin of taste, or there was an article called The Hardness of Art, which talks about how art in general is just a fairly ungiving medium in terms of what you get back from it.
Yeah.
And I mean, these are great articles and they raise a lot of good points, and it's sort of just like a food for thought thing.
Just for my sake and maybe some people listening, how would you define a visual artist?
Just a painter. A painter, someone who draws landscapes.
Okay, so I see a lot of smart bands that, like, are not doing the things we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Some of them have attached themselves with somebody who is a visual artist and almost have them a part of the band. And that way they have these things they can send out as well as promoting their music. And
I think that's
a good way. This is a simple approach to add more to the fact that you're going to have a show is that, you know, you have a little... You have somebody that can actually add some stuff to it.
Mm-hmm. And it also helps knowing that an artist is, like, brainstorming and trying to think of things to do to promote that will catch your attention. It's like, okay, this guy's not just going up, you know, logging on his Facebook and saying, hey, come out, KP's. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's working hard at what he's doing. Yeah. And we didn't do Mara yet, but...
Well, we know about Mara. Like, we know about her Facebook page, and she doesn't just post.
Yeah, well, I mean, Mara, like, what she did by making those merch books, you know, from scratch, but with their own hands. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to go buy one of those. I'm going to, you know, I'm interested in what's going on here. And it's like, and you see an artist putting a lot of effort into finding different ways to promote themselves, and it's more inspiring than...
Even just things like, post like an interesting article that you read. Post like, there's a lot of great NPR articles that get written, and if you post one of those to your artist page, I wouldn't have seen this otherwise. I'm going to check out this guy's page more often because he's going to post good shit.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Not just, you know, the standard promotional stuff all the time.
Conversely, you got to be careful with what you say because you can't just be saying, like, everything you want to say.
Right.
You know?
And to
kind of overload the person.
Yeah, exactly, you need a good balance.
And to go off that, being careful what you say, I think, has a lot to do with appealing to your friends instead of appealing to your fans. And I think a lot of people are doing that, posting whatever they want, just come to the show, you know. Why not come to the show? But I have... A lot of people, I guess I know, have 800 to 1,000 Facebook friends.
Right.
And you're not just appealing to your close friends anymore. And you can't just say it like, hey, come on to the show. Why not? You know, please.
Yeah.
You need to actually promote yourself as a product and not not a man who needs a favor.
Yeah.
I've said that before.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree with that.
Let's move on to another one.
Number two.
Posting at the wrong times. Another deadly sin.
Well, this one's super simple. I mean, there's... Just like in television, there's peak hours. There's like a prime time that you want to take advantage of.
Yeah. You got to think about when your demographic is sitting in front of their computer doing nothing but scouting.
I mean, analytics takes care of all of this. Mm-hmm. If you go to your Facebook profile and you use analytics, you can find out when people are visiting your page. So post 15 minutes before this huge influx of people visits your page, and they'll see a new update when they get there.
This is cool. I didn't know this. Like, I scanned through this article before. I thought I read the whole thing, but apparently not. It has a point about there's a very cool tool for Twitter. It's called... why is it called that? Tweriod? Tweriod. And it can, like, track when... when your followers are online and where in the world they are.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be, like... Because for everyone else, it's different, right? There is no set time to post things. It's like, it's always going to be different.
There on Facebook, there are like peak hours. I mean, there are definitely peak hours.
But I still feel like, even if like there are peak hours, like as a whole, that even for you, there are going to be different peak
hours. The more specific you can get, the better. Like if you can really talk, like if you just say, these are the hours most people are on Facebook. If you can say, these are the hours that my fans are on Facebook and target that, that's going to be way more effective than the broader range of when normally people are
on Facebook. The general knowledge people say is, oh, you should post on Sunday night because everybody's home after, you know, and no one's doing really anything on a Sunday night before they go to work on Monday. But then again, that may not necessarily be your specific demographic for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
exactly.
Should we be mentioning where this site
is? Well, we'll link it in the...
We'll link it in the
description.
Yeah, but it can't hurt to say now, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can say if you like.
It's, Jesus.
It's on DIYmusician.cdbaby.com.
There you go. Thank you, Savick. I can't read, apparently.
Oh, it's tough to read.
It looked like an L. I'm like, what is DIY musician?
Do it yourself.
Do DIY. Less yourself. Okay, so number three... just being generic and self-indulgent, which is kind of something we talked about before when we talked about number one.
I mean, yeah, having, like, a personality in the way you post is super important. Like, everyone posts the same stuff, come to my show, and like we said earlier, like, the only difference between these posts are, I'll see you there, or come hang, or whatever. Yeah, like,
or a little
try
joke.
And, yeah, try and have, like, a bit of personality, a bit, like, try and have fun with your posts. Because if you're bored writing your posts, I'm going to be 10 times as bored reading them.
Right. Yeah. I think I'm certainly guilty of seeing these things, shows that I probably would enjoy going to see.
Mm-hmm.
But when I see these posts, I don't find myself motivated to see it. Mm-hmm. And I think a part of why it's generic and you want to get away from being generic is to name the show something or have a theme towards that end. Mm-hmm. So you can actually bring that to the table when you actually make a post on Facebook.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just going to say, come to my show, or come to the show.
It really, it's not a hard thing to do, to add your own personality into your posts. And it's the difference between people noticing it and just blending into the background noise of the internet.
I do think, though, when you say put in your personality, I think it should be more appropriated to the product's personality.
Yeah.
Because as soon as I
see it... Yeah, well, If you're in a really dark band, but you're a super quirky person, you don't want super quirky posts, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I find it's a huge thing is, like, just making sure your posts are professional in the sense that, like, a lot of bands do the kind of generic thing. I don't know how many times, and I'm guilty of it too, I don't know how many times I've written for Midcoast, like, hey, Midcoast show, come hang, for lack of anything else to say, and I've got to get better at that. But I find the difference between local acts who are not really pulling a huge draw to, like, professional acts is, like, you're not kind of just writing whatever quirky, dumb thing you want when you're, like, professional acts are kind of expecting their audience to be there. They're not begging them for anything. It's kind of like, hey, here's the show, whatever. Maybe they have, like, personality or a way they post. But it's not like, hey, please come out to the show or come hang or, like, let's have some beers together. Like, it's not what you're supposed to be posting.
Yeah.
There was this band I used to play with. Not play in the band, but I played certain shows with them in other bands called The Main Thing. And it's a funk group that played a lot downtown Toronto. They had a lot of great shows, and they also named their shows. They called them Super Soul Sound Reviews. And that way, when they posted online about it, they can have things that are linked to that. They could say, come for some soul, or the sound, or get funky, or something like that. And then they have a picture that goes with that of this theme that is the show. Instead of, hey, I got a band, you know, come on down.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Already we have a lot more depth to the post.
Yeah,
it's more work, but it's, like, worth it, right?
Much worth it, yeah, because I'd rather go see Super Soul Sound Review than a guy playing at a gig.
Yeah.
And I don't even know much about it besides
that. The No Shaving Trio.
Yeah.
Live at... yeah. Okay, so number four. Irregular posting patterns when it comes to putting things online.
Now, this one, most people don't think about, but, like, a lot of successful bloggers, YouTubers... and musicians all sort of do this. If you have a day when your content comes out, like for us, for the podcast, it's normally every second Thursday.
Yeah.
And it gets messed up when things happen. But I mean, if you have a more or less consistent day that new content for your page comes out, people are going to say, oh, it's Wednesday night. I'm going to check this page because this is when they normally have new stuff come out.
That's why TV shows play once a week. Everybody gets themselves scheduled for that.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're just sort of posting two or three times a week at random intervals, you're going to get less of an impact from each post than you would if you had Thursday night, 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
This is my thing that comes out.
Yeah. Well, even for me, like, I follow a lot of, you know, like sports blogs, stuff like that. So they'll even have names for the scheduled posts, right? It's like, you know, Monday morning media mashup, you know? It's like, this is something that happens Monday mornings at 9 a.m. It's all the weekly links, or the weekend links, you know, from everything that's happened in terms of the Blue Jays, because it's a Blue Jays blog, right? So, or like, you know, like afternoon snack is what they call it, and it's just like a bunch of links from the morning and the night before they go up, you know? So it's like scheduling things and also having a brand.
Having like a specific thing that you deal with at a specific time is super... For me, it's... I watch a lot of StarCraft shows.
Do you?
Yeah. That's a thing. And I mean, like, for a lot of people, it's like, all right, so Tuesday.
Yeah.
The show is Newbie Tuesday, where we search on, or we work on, like, super simple things.
Nice.
And then, like, Monday will be talking mechanics, and it's... Yeah. There's
Mechanic Monday?
Yeah, no. Oh. Unfortunately not. But it's stuff like, you know... Shit. You... It's like, oh... There's something very specific that I'm looking for, and this is the time when that specific content comes out.
Yeah. And you can also, like, search for it in the history, and you'll know where exactly it'll be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. I think this is very important, to post things on the reg.
I never even thought of that until I saw this site.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Oh, God.
Well, I know. It's just such a normal thing to just kind of want to post whenever something comes up.
Yeah.
But if you think, like, oh, I should save this for this time when people are actually going to see it.
And on another level... you want to think about it too as like, I mean, regularly in the sense of like a schedule is important, but also like not disappearing for months at a time.
Yeah.
I've been guilty of at times. Because then when you come back, people are like, well.
Who are you?
Yeah.
Gotta start fresh again.
It's kind of like, not calling a girlfriend for a couple, like a little too long, and then all of a sudden you call them and they're like, well, that's kind of rude. So your fan base isn't really going to appreciate you just giving them the cold shoulder for a few
And I mean, at the very least. Sorry?
Nothing.
Okay.
No, I didn't say that.
At the very least, what you need to do is, like, log onto your page and say, hey guys, super busy right now, won't be posting for a little bit. Fairly. Or, like, sorry I haven't posted in a while, new stuff coming this time.
Or make here's positive, no apology. I would recommend no apology.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Say, exciting stuff on the way, can't wait to get it to you. You know, it's going to be amazing, you're going to be off the chain, the proverbial chain.
And just personally, on that note, like, I really like having a date for things. I like it when people say, exciting stuff coming on this date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate just saying, like...
Coming.
Like, this will be coming out soon. I have a friend who had released a single. She lives in Liverpool, and she released a single. And I remember seeing, like, coming out soon. And it was, like, 3 months later when it finally was released. And I was just like, ah...
Like, that's not that soon.
Yeah, well, it's not that soon. I'd like having like a specific date when things are happening, because then I can say like, oh fuck, today's the 12th. This is happening for this artist. Yeah. Let's check it out.
I've seen a lot of bands that go for that approach, and they say this is coming out. The album is coming out on June 6th. Then June 6th comes around, and they're like, it's coming out on June 8th. You know, and when they commit to these dates. That's a whole other game now, so you gotta be able to commit to these
That's
days.
Part of the whole professionalism thing. Like,
exactly.
If you can't make deadlines, then you have a serious problem that you need to work out. It's not just posting on Facebook, it's like an issue with you in general.
Yeah.
I say as a group, but not necessarily, I suppose, if you're a singer-songwriter.
Alright, next point.
Next point! So, where are we on? Number five right now?
Number five.
5 of 7. Telling the what, but not the why.
Perfect.
That Ragnar mentioned this earlier, like, I have a band, but, like, why should I care about your band?
Just because I'm your friend?
Yeah. I have probably 300 or 400 friends on Facebook who are musicians.
Yeah.
And they all have a band.
And I bet I love all their music.
Yeah.
You know?
Well.
Trying to be a nice guy.
Yeah. But, you know, like, what is your band doing to make me like them? It was a chair, don't worry.
Always with my fucking chair, sorry.
Making fart noise.
Yeah, but yeah, like, what is your band doing that makes me want to care?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other reasons why is, of course, that what it comes down to is, I guess, you need to convince them that this is good for, like, this is for them and not for you.
Yeah.
Because when I ask, usually people are like, come to my show, and then you come to the show and you're like, thanks for coming, and like, you just did me a favor.
Mm-hmm.
But you're supposed to be selling fun, basically. You're supposed to be selling a good time, and you need to prove that to them right away, that if you come, this is why you're going to come, because you get this. You're not doing this for me. You get this. You get music. You get, you know, a good time. You get to hang out with a bar with some great, you know, good company.
It's a business.
I mean, it's a business. This is like a weird connection here, but if you look at like Home Hardware, their like tagline is helping homeowners, right? They're like, we're here to help you out. It's not like, buy our shit.
Buy our shit so we don't go broke.
Yeah.
That's basically what I've seen actually posts that literally say that. Come to our show so we don't, you know, lose money. Like things like that. They're saying in a joking way, like, come to our show so we can keep going as a band.
Yeah.
Like, that does not do anything for me. It tells me that you guys are.
There's
unique.
A level of professionalism that's just not being met.
Yeah.
And I mean, unless that's your band's like vibe and the whole thing, unless you're like a Parliament cover band wearing fucking spacesuits on stage, you know, like if you're a joking style of band, then by all means,
that's a fine joke, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did we mention like as part of the why people should care about the music? Did we talk about that?
Yeah,
a little bit.
Why people should care about the music?
Yeah.
How do you mean?
Why should they care to come out? Like, cause you're just having a fun time. Like,
because that's actually an interesting point. Like, why should people care about your music?
Well, that's something that Savick, you and I were talking about on the way here too. Is that
you guys had a really good discussion?
Great discussion. We ruined everything when it comes to like getting it out here right now. On the walk here, or sorry, the drive here, we talked about how the majority of our friend community are all musicians. Mostly because we're musicians, so obviously we hang out with those kind of people. So they're the most likely people that are going to go to a show. But in general, a lot of people are more prone to go on Netflix and sit down at home and watch live streams of things than to actually go to the show.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. Why should they care enough to get on the streetcar and pay the trip down and then pay the cover and see you and then go back home and watch Netflix? Because again, people are getting lazy. That's a whole
like
other conversation.
You got to realize that you need to compete with the new fucking Game of Thrones episode that apparently everyone's losing their mind over. Which I haven't seen yet,
don't
fucking say anything about it.
I'm still reading the second book, I gotta catch
audience,
up.
Listening
okay,
audience,
listening okay. audience. Okay, reading.
Yeah, Facebook posts, just all about the Game of Thrones.
It's all about audiobooks, Dan, it's all about audiobooks.
Oh. Why read? I
like the written word.
Game of Thrones, read by Betty White.
So Game of Thrones is doing alright in terms of social media, because everyone else does it for them.
That's a great way to, you know, get your band out there. Just
for real.
Get everybody else to do it. Hire everybody else. But actually,
if you think about it, get people to like your shit enough that they'll promote it for you.
Well, I think maybe the thing that relates to that when it comes to music, it's analogous to street teams. Before you go to take a tour to somewhere, you make sure you call up their head, because you'll know, like, you're going to go take a gig to Montreal, and you already know you have one fan in Montreal. You can message him and say, hey, could you get together a little team and get some stuff around for us?
Yeah.
And then they can help you out with
and we'll give you guys all a free ticket to the show.
Exactly. And it's more likely that he'll be able to get his friends out than we'll be able to get strangers out.
Yeah.
Or, call Emma and get a publicist.
There you go.
It's actually one thing. It's a little bit off topic. It's shocking how effective postering is.
Yeah.
And since I moved to Toronto, I don't know any bands that poster. I mean, I know bands that like put up posters at Humber.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I haven't talked to anyone who goes downtown and goes to each of those fucking street poles and posting boards and puts up a poster for their show.
But there's so much work. Who would want to submit themselves to that kind of effort? That degrading posting.
It's like it's actually a really great feeling. Like when I was in grade 9, my ska band played a gig at this venue in Edmonton, and we went out and we spent $50 on colorful posters. They looked like shit, but they were bright pink and bright neon. We made sure to get the neon paper. And like we put those all up and down the street where we were playing. Put those all up and down downtown. And you go to the show and you see people you don't recognize. And you talk to them after and they're like, yeah, I saw your poster and I decided to come out. It's a great feeling. And like nobody here seems to do that. It's just we advertise to our friends and not to a potential fan base.
That's the key right there. Yeah. Is that we're advertising to friends on Facebook instead of our actual demographic that's out in the people we don't know. That's what we want to get.
Yeah.
Because we already got kind of the friends, but if we start asking them for favors over and over again because we can't get anybody else, then you're kind of beating a dead horse.
Then you owe them favors, and who wants that, really?
Then they have to vote for you in the next band competition.
Okay, let's go on to the second last one.
I kind of got off topic.
Number six. No, it's still good to talk about, you know?
Yeah, I had a great talk with you guys just now.
Good talk. So, forgetting that your timeline is a shop front.
I mean,
Skip
that one. Well, I mean, it's not important. That
well,
means
no, it's just it's
like
yeah,
6.5 deadly sins.
It's really like people don't use their profile really to the best of their ability.
They think that once you post it up there, it's like a text message and it's gone now after a couple
well,
of days.
No, I think of it more in another way as if like a shopfront, like it's something that I can, like a shopfront is something I can walk past and glance at to see what the product is.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Sure. With a Twitter timeline, I don't know why I keep saying Twitter. Maybe because I'm fucking addicted. But like, you know, I can scroll down an artist's page, and if every single post is playing a show here at 8 o'clock, playing a show here at tonight's show, I'm like, okay, that's nice.
It's
but,
true, you know. Actually, we shouldn't skip this. I do like when I find a new band, even if it's not necessarily the Facebook timeline, but website or whatever. I'm checking out when I first check out a band. If I log onto their stuff, any social media, and find a bunch of interesting shit right off the bat, mm-hmm. and I'm like, I've been on your website for 2 seconds and I'm watching a dope video, I'm probably gonna buy your record at some point.
Yeah,
especially
yeah.
if I like the music.
It can even come down to stuff that's as simple as, you know, updating, making sure your profile picture and banner picture on Facebook are up to date with something interesting. So
yeah.
instead of just having the same banner for months on end, have it like, you know, your band name, but then, like, information, like, this show at
yeah,
this time
sure.
here.
Yeah.
It comes, like, when I think of a shop front, like, yeah, you walk by and I see, like, if I walk by Long and McQuaid downtown, I'm going to see, like, okay, it's a music shop, cool, this is what it's about. But I'm also going to see fucking 20% off on this, like,
yeah.
these are free for
no,
some
this
reason.
Deal
yeah,
these are free. This deal happening right now.
yeah, this
sell the free stuff.
This is what is happening right now. And, I mean, you can,
yeah,
totally.
People just don't make,
yeah.
don't take enough advantage of the tools.
No kidding. If they're around you and your business, you need to be shouting at them about all these possibilities they can have with it. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
it's a really good point.
Number seven.
The
finally deadly, deathly sin.
Oh, I really agree with this one, too.
I fucking hate this.
When people do this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
No kidding.
So it's adopting the same strategy for Facebook and Twitter is a deadly sin.
Right.
Deadly's in the title, right? I'm not just saying deadly all the time here.
It is deadly. Yeah.
Sick!
You had a nice attitude anyway. Basically, like, they have this thing on Facebook where you can, anytime you post on Facebook, it'll go right to your Twitter page, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whereas I agree with anything you post on Facebook being put onto Twitter, that could be argued right there. You know, that's just my personal
yeah,
idea.
I'm with no on
sure,
this
you guys don't see that. But my point is that you can't it contaminates the other site.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Maybe you can talk about why you don't like that.
Why I don't like when people do the exact same thing on both?
Well, I like trying to, like, with Twitter, I find that's just about posting, and you want to get stuff up there so I can look through and see all these different things. So whenever I have a Facebook post, I want that up on the Twitter thing, too. If I go onto
mm-hmm.
Twitter and post something, I certainly don't want to contaminate the Facebook, because
yeah,
the Facebook is all about the timing.
Yeah,
most
I see it as laziness. Sorry, but go ahead, Savick.
No, I was saying, like, most people just view it as, yeah, it really does come down to laziness, I guess. Most people
okay.
just view them as social media, but they're two completely separate things.
Yeah.
Twitter is for posting small updates, letting people know like what's going on throughout like a smaller scale.
But more frequently.
More frequently on a smaller
yeah.
scale, yeah. Whereas Facebook is about like, hey, here's this big thing.
Right.
Here's this cool.
Here's this like 300 character post that
yeah.
I definitely can't put on Twitter.
Right, you
know,
exactly.
And also with a link, you know?
Yeah.
Now, but if you can do like put unique posts on Twitter and still have these other things on there, it's not exactly the exact same strategy of Facebook and Twitter being
mm-hmm.
the exact same thing, because you can still give Twitter its own posts that you wouldn't put on Facebook.
Yeah,
right.
So would you agree with that? Not so much. I see you grimacing.
I don't. I'm sorry.
No, I love it. That's why I'm here, man.
I interrupted you.
No, I just I want completely separate things. Like if I want completely separate things so that I can choose which one to follow.
Yeah.
I don't want to be on Twitter and see this Facebook post that's more than 144 characters, that 140, very important issue here.
Yeah.
yeah. I don't want to see a post that's more than 140 characters and I have to click a link to go to Facebook to see the rest of it. That pisses me off.
Oh, okay. That's,
so
that's a good point.
You know?
So you want to make sure that's different. But then again, also, if I'm on Twitter
yeah.
and I'm checking out the stuff, me as the person who runs that Twitter site, I'd want you to go to my Facebook page too.
But
so to show that there's actually some stuff there, too.
There's a super easy way around this that can easily be solved by, like, just not linking your two profiles.
Sure, exactly.
It's just, if you write a super cool update on your Facebook page, and it's, like, a cool article or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you can go to Twitter and say, like, just updated my Facebook page with some cool new information. Check it out. Link. Good to go. instead of, you know...
Also, here's a picture of my dinner.
Yeah.
Take 1 minute instead of 2 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not exactly a hassle or anything.
Something that is also mentioned in the article as part of this point, and the article is by Nick Robertson. We'll put a link to the article, of course, like we said we would.
Yep.
But that'd be important to mention who wrote the actual article.
That we're talking about for hours.
Yeah. Something he mentions is... Like, there are specific items tailored to Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Tumblr that don't translate well to the other sites. So if, for example, on Twitter, if you're using a hashtag...
Don't fucking hashtag on Facebook.
That's
It drives me nuts when I see that shit.
Oh my god, guys, don't hashtag on Twitter.
It doesn't even have a point... Like, hashtags are supposed to be... Like, you can click them. That's
the best. Hashtags on Twitter, you can click it and see every other tweet with the same hashtag. And that's why
they're great. But it's just this weird, cool fad when you put it on Facebook, but it doesn't actually do anything. You're trying to be hip or something. Mm-hmm. And that really alienates a lot of people. It alienates me, because I don't really use Twitter as much personally. And I see that, and I'm like, whatever. I can't really... Don't care about a hashtag. Yeah.
Hashtags on Twitter, like, you know, there are aggregators that will be like, you know, like, they find all... It's like a bot. It finds all the tweets that have this specific hashtag. You know, for example, like Canadian Music Week.
Yeah.
You know, that was something that you could click on, and I'm pretty sure there was one feed that was an aggregator of that.
Yeah.
And you would be able to see all the posts related to Canadian Music Week by the artists, you know? So, something like that.
It's basically like a search function for every tweet written.
Twitter is the greatest search... You
see TV shows now? Like, any TV show... Maybe the TV show has an event, like Survivor has immunity challenges, so they'll put in the hashtag Immunity Idol through the entire scene when they're going for the immunity challenge.
Yeah.
And then you got shows like Workaholics, a comedy show. It's pretty funny. They talk about getting autographs, Jean-Claude Van Damme's autograph. They call it a Claudograph. And then during the show, they have a hashtag Claudograph.
Show up on that,
and now it inspires everybody to make a joke about, hey, it's so funny, the Claudograph is hilarious. And then all of a sudden, everybody's really like, what's Claudograph?
Yeah.
It's really smart. Yeah.
There it is. Mm-hmm. I'm exhausted of these topics. I have not much else to say.
Through interviews. Yeah.
Hey, I guess
had a blast, guys.
I guess the rule. I guess if we can say like the moral of the story is just like fix your shit up.
I think the moral of the story is figure out each different social
common
media.
Common sense, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like we could maybe talk about how all of us as individuals are on Facebook a lot of the time because everybody fucking. You know, around here.
Because I'm unemployed and I have nothing to
do. Exactly, aren't we all? So we're up on Facebook and we're seeing these posts all the time and they really are not wanting us to see these things. That could really be fucking sick because we know good music around here. It's Toronto. We have great music in Toronto. We got bad music, sure. We got a lot of great music. And this is a problem because I could be your fan and I look at that shit and I'm like, fuck, I just move right on. I don't even think about it.
Yeah.
I get a little post to me and they're like, hey, like my page. I'm like, fuck, I don't want to like your page. Unless I really like see like why, you know.
I'll like your page on my own accord, you know. Like,
I don't know. If I get like promoted, like if you like my, not if you like, not like a bargaining chip, but you know, just like a reason why.
We were talking about this like if you like my page in the next 10 days, you'll be entered in a draw to win an album.
That's something I would be more,
That's actually pretty good.
We talked about that on the ride here, too.
And then you can unlike it later when it sucks, because it's your job to make it not suck.
Right.
You know?
But just, like, reasons, that's the number, what number was that? Number four? Number five. What but not why. So there's the why right there. If you do this, you will receive from us. We will give back to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so, we got a bunch more show coming to you. This next tune you're gonna hear is called "Wash" by Mara and the Marigold. Hope you guys enjoy.
It's a 30 second.
Only 30 seconds.
It's a sneak preview.
Sneak preview. Exclusively from
exclusive. That was the word.
I was gonna say exclusive from Hits and Gigs.
An exclusive 30 second sneak preview.
If you try to find it somewhere else, you won't.
You won't.
So this is where you get it.
So all right, enjoy. We'll be back.
And it's washed away.
All right, welcome back. That was a small clip from a new tune called Wash off of Mara and the Marigolds' new EP. And now we are joined by Mara Nesralla of Mara and the Marigold. How you doing, Mara?
I'm good. How are you doing, Noah?
Doing awesome.
Great.
Doing great. So, well, love the tune, honestly. Like, it's really nice. And we're also going to hear another piece of yours after the interview is done. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about the EP? Like, how...
Yeah, sure.
Where the idea came from?
I've been writing tunes forever. It seems like forever.
Jesus.
It's a long time.
Yeah. A long time of writing tunes. No, okay, so I actually probably started writing when I was in grade 10 of high school. And it was when I was in my second year at Humber that I decided to bring my songs to a band and see if we could kind of collaborate and make them into more than just me sitting at the piano and singing. And we kind of did that for a year. It's myself, Wes Allen, Ian Cully, and before it was Mike Boyd, but now it's Ian Wright. And we did that for about a year, and then the more we did shows, we realized that it would be really solid to get some actual material out to help bring our band to, like, the next step. So the song that you're going to hear later is called Wanderer, and that was the single. And that was recorded, holy moly, a year ago?
Well.
A little over a year ago. We did it in the... Yeah. Yeah, a little over a year ago, and was released this January. But then the rest of the tunes, it's a 6-track album, and the rest of the songs were recorded starting in February of this year, and are now going to be available on the 14th.
So Mara, what made you decide to want to get the band together?
This is a great story. Well, it's not a great story, but it's like a pretty awesome story. So I was in a jazz jam that our good friend Graham Coe had put together. So we're sitting in probably like 204 at Humber College playing jazz tunes, and we'd been going for a while, so it was like break time, and everyone went and got some water. And so I sat down at the piano and I was just like playing some songs, and good old Wes Allen just sat down beside me. He's like, "This is pretty cool." I was like, "Thanks." He's like, "You sound like Patrick Watson," which I don't actually think I really do sound like Patrick Watson in the slightest, but that was his like first comparison. And then, yeah, I was just like, I was thinking about maybe trying to do something with this. And he was like, "Yeah, totally, I would really love to do that." And then, the next guy I got on board was Mike. Mike and Ian and Wes and I were all in improv class together, and I was watching them, and they were all, like, playing a tune together. And I was like, they have really good chemistry as three musicians. And so after the class, I went up to Mike. I was like, "Would you be interested in maybe playing some of my songs?" He's like, "Yeah, of course." And then we were at the very first Bad, Bad, Not Good show ever.
Nice.
Of Eternity. And the first
one. Once again,
one.
Quite a long time. Eternity.
Continue. Yeah.
It's kind of like forever.
Does suck.
I mean, like, really, if you think about it, like, the Earth is 7 billion-ish years old.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard for me to even comprehend, like, 100 years, let alone eternity. Yeah.
Superlatives.
What about, like,
sorry.
7 billion plus 100 years? Like, what about that?
That's insane.
Yeah.
I can't even think about it.
So, the members
Anyways,
of the band. Yes.
I was sitting at this concert, and I was telling Ian Cully that Wes and Mike and I were gonna start playing my tunes together. And I was like, I probably should put another, like, harmonic instrument, like, something with texture. I don't know. And he was like, "Mara, that's what I'm all about." He's like, "Hey, Ian, do you want to play in my band?" He's like, "Yes, I do."
Just swooped in like a vulture.
Yeah.
And it was done. And then we had the four of us, and I booked a show, which gave us 1 month to learn an hour and 15 minutes worth of original material.
Yeah.
And we got together, and we played that first show, and it was awesome, and then we've been playing shows ever since, and, yeah.
But Mike Boyd got replaced with Ian Wright after that show, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, oh no, Mike played with us for pretty much the entire first year, and his band, The Medicine Hat, Simon made a funny face. His band, The Medicine Hat, have been growing and growing in popularity, and he had to take a step back from some of the other bands that he was playing with because, so he could invest his effort in Med Hat all the way, which is awesome because they're like one of our kind of sister bands.
We should have them on.
You guys should! They're releasing their album on the very same day as us, on June 14th, and then we're both playing Guelph together for a Med Hat, Marigold, and Ptarmigan extravaganza on July 10th.
His Facebook's gonna be going nuts that day.
Which ties us into...
I actually want to ask you about the evolution of your songs, because you said it was like you playing piano.
Yeah.
Right? But this is like obviously not like singer-songwriter piano kind of band.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like how did you how did you change the music so that it fit this ensemble more?
I honestly didn't really have a clear vision of what it was going to end up sounding like in the slightest. I found guys that I liked and guys whose like musical tastes and their playing I was really drawn to. And who had good chemistry. And then, like, the first time, and this is how we workshop all our tunes, I'll sit down. I don't have charts for them. And I'll play a tune in full. And then we'll break it into, like, we'll kind of figure out what the form is. And then we'll workshop one thing. And they'll just start playing. Like, so, kind of the first thing that's probably established is what the groove is actually going to be, and that was all up to whatever Ian or Mike at the time would be doing. He just sits down, and you know, every so like I have kind of shots or like if there's certain punches that I want, like, and that I feel when I'm playing, I make that apparent, but really they like take it in the direction that they feel right for the tune. And so then, like, kind of bass and drums gets really solid. And then poor Ian Cully, it takes him a while because he's basically writing counter melodies and parts. And so we just take these sections and loop them and loop them and loop them and record everything. And by the end of it, we piece it all together and kind of figure out what's going down.
Nice.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of trust and responsibility put into guys like Ian Cully to write these parts.
Oh, totally. And I kind of went into it thinking that it, like it's not like I know it's like Mara and the Marigold, but I think it's like really a band, and I think the sound that we get, it sounds like Ian and it sounds like Wes and it sounds like Ian. Like it doesn't just sound like me. I think it's like really representative of all their playing because they have so much liberty within, like, my songs to do what they will.
So when you bring in a song for the first time and you play it in full, are there ever sections added? Or is it, like, they take kind of what's there and they kind of add their own personality to it? Or, like, there are, like, new sections added and new things happening once it kind of ends up being done?
Usually, like, there are some, like, definitely new things. And like, forms and intros and outros and all that stuff can be... is rearranged, and you know, some of our tunes have kind of instrumentally things that happen, and those are usually written just from like jamming on something and be like, oh, that's super cool, let's put that here. So yeah, things get shifted around, but they are like all the songs are quite close to where I started with them because I kind of had envisioned already that, like, you know, if there's an instrumental breakdown, I'd written the harmonic stuff for that already. But, like, it might be replaced or, like, revisited. Like, in Wanderer, the thing that is so staple of that is those crazy shots in the middle.
I was going to bring that up, yeah.
And that was completely just because it was grooving when we were grooving on something, and one guy kind of, I don't even know who came up with it at first, and then we just worked it out until we found, like, those shots and where they fit. And then we made a whole section dedicated to that because it was so cool. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I want to get away from the music a little bit.
Okay.
And ask you just about something that we talked about before we started recording. And you mentioned that you were doing a bit of touring right now, like booking tours.
Yeah.
And like planning the whole EP thing and like the business side of things.
Yeah.
It's probably pretty crazy for you right now.
It's the most crazy.
The most crazy.
The most crazy.
It's like crazy forever, right?
Eternity's crazy. This is like past Charles Manson crazy.
Yeah. He's pretty normal.
Deranged.
Yeah.
So okay, well, what I want to ask is, like, in terms of like planning the tour, I want to know all about the tour. Like, where are you planning on going? Like, how did you get in touch to make sure it all fit scheduling wise? Like, bit of a loaded question, but
yeah,
take what you will. You know,
like, I guess we just figured like we are releasing an album, so we have to play with it in different cities and try to promote it and try to build a new fan base outside of our fan base now. And so, yeah, I've just been sending a lot of emails.
Fun.
Yeah.
Where are you looking to tour exactly? Like, where are you looking to take it?
Okay, so right now we've got... So on the 14th of June is the release in Toronto, and we'll be going to Peterborough on the 15th. We've been working really closely with the band Ptarmigan, who's the band leader of Ptarmigan is named Peter McMurtry, and Peter and I have pretty much been working side by side to kind of tag team and figure out, like, okay, you're going to book this city because you have those connections there. I'm going to book this city because I have these connections here.
Right. Nice.
And kind of work together for that. So, since they are all Peterborough born, they took care and set up Peterborough. And Guelph was also set up by Peter because he lives in Guelph.
Peter from Peterborough? Is that?
Yeah. Peter and his bros. Yeah.
So he did Peterborough, Guelph. How many cities are you guys doing?
Right now, it looks like we're doing Toronto twice or three times in the summer. We are doing Peterborough, Guelph, Ottawa. Right now, I'm working on getting Kingston, Picton, and Belleville booked. Other things might slip. We've been trying to get on Montreal. Maybe fell through a little bit. I don't know. What? Why are you shaking
your head? Because I'll get you Montreal. What are you not talking
about?
Well,
no, I know you'll get me Montreal, but also...
I'm going to buff that shit out.
It's actually a ridiculously difficult process, given the fact that my musicians are
a little busy.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, you're playing with some really great musicians.
Exactly.
These are hardworking musicians playing in a lot of different bands, such as yourself.
In terms of
sending the emails to all these places, like, obviously you're contacting like the booking manager or whatever at the place.
Yeah.
How is it working for asking for money? Because, I mean, I would understand if, like, a tour, like, you would, like, expect to maybe not make all the money back.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, are you being, like, pretty tough in terms of, like, I want this much for this show?
No. We try to make something that seems reasonable, but I actually, it usually, because the places that I've been booking as well, they have kind of, like, lots of set regulations. And so I come up, I kind of cold call them or, like, email them. Just tell them about my band, tell them about the EP, give them some listening examples. And then I usually say I'm interested in working within these dates, which are ones that I try to, like, beforehand I talk to my guys, figure out which ones work for them, and then I give those to the booker. And either they say, like, no, sorry, we can't make that happen, or they say, I've got this available. And, like, so for example, we just got the financial breakdown back from the place in Guelph. We're playing E-Bar in Guelph. And,
nice.
It's through, like, a company called Gain Music, and so they have, like, a pretty extensive financial breakdown where they kind of show, like, the promotion, like, what costs they're putting into it. I've never actually run into an issue. Same with, like, Zaphod's in Ottawa. I've never run into an issue where it doesn't seem reasonable. And we're also, you know, selling the album, and so we're going to be getting a fair amount of, hopefully, if people want to buy it, we're getting a fair amount in for that. And then any other place, they would be just saying, you can charge whatever you want to at the door.
Nice.
And so you figure out between how many bands are playing and all those different factors, the kind of event that it is, how much we want to charge for tickets.
Cool.
Yeah.
I have a question about how, obviously, it's a bit of a challenge when you go on tour to make sure that when you go to these venues, you're going to have a turnout of people coming to the show. Now, when it comes to Ptarmigan, maybe they're taking care of their side of things with those gigs that you have lined up with them. Mm-hmm. But how do you strategize making sure that you'll have fans coming out to your shows?
Like ones where...
Like not the city where you know people, I guess?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Kingston's a really good example of that. I think we're really lucky at Humber that we know a lot of people from a lot of different places.
Right.
So I've just, like, started talking to people that live in those cities originally, that are, like, native of that city, and what knowing, like, if they have any bands that they know of that has, like, high popularity or that they think would work musically with us. So, for example, in Kingston, there's a band called Wilderling that my friend Paul Barton told me about. And
great guitar player.
Yes. Sort of incredible. Good. And also, he sometimes plays trumpet for them.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Gosh.
And so I got in contact with the guys at Wilderling and said, you know, made the connection between Paul, showed them my music, and said, would you be interested in playing a show with us? Because, you know, go on Facebook and Wilderling has like 600 likes and they obviously have a good little hometown crowd. And that's how you kind of make that happen.
Definitely where to start, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then that way, too, hopefully these bands will call you back to start playing with them, mm-hmm. right? Like, you can, with you being kind of the initial catalyst, will hopefully can, like, turn into this relationship where if they come to Toronto, like, and they want to play with us, they can, or, you know, vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Okay, Mara, so before we end the interview, the topic of the day, something we're kind of talking about is just kind of like promotion through social media.
Yeah.
Do you find that there's a certain way that you've gone about this on any platform that kind of has like shown signs of like benefiting the tour, the promotion of the tour, or the promotion of the EP?
I use Facebook a lot. It's probably my primary, like, social media thing. I try to use Twitter, but I'm really inconsistent with it, so I don't think... I probably should be more consistent with Twitter to do that. On Facebook, I kind of try to show my personality and our personality. Like, we make really quirky, weird videos before shows. And it's just, like, a thing that we've started. I don't know if you've ever seen one of them before.
Yeah.
And just a way, like, I find, like, pictures and videos are more engaging than just, like, hey!
Playing a show tonight, hashtag come.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right? And so we try to
it's
do
the
things
best
that'll...
hashtag ever.
Hashtag come.
Not.
I know.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, so we try to do those things that are more engaging. I think I'm a pretty... Like, some people might get frustrated that I post a lot about Marigold on, like, my own Mara and Azrala page. But I, you know, I have 900 friends there and only, like, 300 fans.
Yeah, you reach more people.
Yeah, it definitely reaches more people. Yeah. And so you do a lot of, like, the sharing between the two of them.
Yeah, and if people don't like you, they can just block you, so...
Well, exactly. That's their own choice.
You're gonna upset, or, like, yeah. You know, you're gonna bug people once in a while, but it's kind of part of the ballgame.
Yeah, it's not like I'm these days I've been a little bit of a everyday poster, but usually it's only in taste. Like, I try to be tasteful about it. And things that I think people will actually be interested about, or, like, for example, my roommate and I, we've made these handcrafted books that we're selling as merchandise.
Wow.
And so, sweet. Like, I posted a picture of the books, and, like, lots of people liked it, and were like, when are you selling these? Like, what are they? Blah, blah, blah. And I think... That's exactly what you need. You're engaging them because they see the visual and they know, like, now that it's, like, something that I've been working on for hours and just, to be more engaging. I'm trying to, I try to, like, branch out into all the sites and make sure I'm all there.
It's really difficult.
That's difficult. Yeah. And even, like, visually, I try to make a consistency, like, my Twitter and my Bandcamp and... Like, my CBC page, and my YouTube, and my Facebook, jeez. Like, you have to be on all of those, and, like, I try to make some sort of visual, like, line through them, so when they see, like, those colors, or that image, it's like, oh, that's Marigold.
Yeah.
Nice. But, yeah.
When you bring up the books, if I saw that on Facebook, I would be immediately more prone to check that out than just... looking at the everyday post about check out my band. So that's something that I would actually find would seem to work for. It would appeal to me. Because usually I'm pretty guilty of going, even if it's a good friend of mine, I'd be like, I don't want to look at that because everybody has that up.
I like enough bands already. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm pretty happy with my band, you know, preferences. But then all of a sudden the book comes up too. Like, I got some neat shit coming on. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Cool.
So Mara, thanks so much for coming on. Yeah. Just again, where can people download the EP and where can they find out about shows?
Oh, thank you. I would have forgotten about that. So, on June 14th, you can download the EP at Mara and the Marigold. You spell them all out. .bandcamp.com. There will be digital download there. But if you want to purchase a physical copy, we have June 14th at the Girard Art Space. That is our Toronto release. June 15th at The Spill in Peterborough. I have July 10th at E-Bar in Guelph. And July 20th, we're back in Toronto at 3030. Oh, so
nice. Great venue.
Yeah. Cool. So fun. Okay. So those are like the kind of next 2 months for us.
Wicked.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that hopefully, you know, people will make it. Well, I mean, people will make it out, obviously. But
I'm going.
That's what I meant to say. Hopefully I make it out because I'm an asshole.
He's an asshole.
Okay, Mara, thanks so much. It was a lot of fun talking to you.
Thanks for coming on, Mara.
So, today on the seventh episode of Hits and Gigs, we're lucky enough to have Melissa Payette in the studio. She is the editor-in-chief at Confront Magazine. Hey, Melissa.
Hi, guys.
How's it going?
I'm going really good. How are you guys?
Pretty good. So we're really excited about this interview today. Melissa's an old friend of mine. We used to work together at Chapters back in Montreal.
Sick.
And now she's working with Confront Magazine, so we got some questions for her. So Melissa, when did you get started in music journalism?
I guess I was about 18 or so. I was going to a lot of concerts with friends, and I just happened to know a few people that worked for Confront, like, back in the day when they first started it. And then I think I kind of just heard that they had an opening. They needed some writers to do some interviews. So me and one of my really good friends applied, and we both got the job on the spot, which was pretty cool. So, yeah, I've been writing for the magazine since, like, 2008-ish. It's been 4 years. So 2009, then.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Wow.
Okay.
I'm actually curious. So they were looking for writers. Did you had writing experience going into the interview?
I had experience. Yeah, I guess. Like, I've always been a writer, kind of. I've had a blog for a really, really long time, and I've just had a lot of experience in music just by going to a lot of shows and that kind of thing. And it's a pretty easy thing to pick up, because literally, for the interview aspect of it, you're just writing down whatever's on the recording. So, like, that in itself was pretty basic, and the rest just kind of came with time.
Nice.
Be great. So, aside from interviewing, what are your other duties, I guess, at Confront Magazine? What do you do besides the interview aspect of the job?
Oh, I do everything at Confront. okay, right now I run the Facebook page, the Twitter page, the Instagram page. I do all of the behind-the-scenes work, so any editing that needs to happen on the actual website, any design changes, any content changes. I do most of the editing for everybody else's work, so anything that goes up in album reviews and interviews, the features, all of that goes through me first, and then I have to post it. I schedule all of the postings. I answer a lot of emails. Sometimes that kind of feels like a full-time job, and yeah, I do my own writing too.
Wow. How do you have time for this?
a lot of discipline, I think. Okay. A lot.
Wow.
What kind of emails do you guys get most of the time?
Oh my god, I get emails from everybody. I run three emails. So the general one for the magazine, which is where bands and publicists and stuff, they can kind of just grab that email off the website. So it gets all of the junk, I guess, and then all of the really cool stuff too. So if bands want to be featured on the magazine, that's generally the email that they'll contact. Okay. So I go through that usually a couple times a day. There's a lot of press releases, and it's just kind of a lot of like sorting through what's good, what's bad, what my writers will be willing to pick up. I have like a general idea of the music that they like. And then I have my work email, which is usually record labels, publicists, and bands that are contacting me personally because they know that I am, like, closely related to the magazine in some way. So they know probably that it's a better way to reach me.
Right.
That's usually where I'm, like, following up with requests for upcoming album reviews or interviews, that kind of thing. And then my personal email, I use a lot for my staff. So it's, like, my highest content email. Oh, my God, it's insane how much I get there. And somehow publicists just seem to get that email address, and I don't know how, because it's not publicized anywhere, but I get a lot of stuff there too, and my staff sends me their work there, so it's an everything email.
Wow, so I think we all have like a ton of questions based on what you just said.
Yes.
It's, like, it's kind of unbelievable to me, like, how much you do. But something I just want to ask you is something you mentioned that, I think it was the second email of the three, like, you said that bands will contact you for features. Do you find that, does the magazine ever contact bands, or is it a lot of bands contacting you for features?
It's definitely a bit of both. So it's like my favorite part of the job when I'm just kind of like, I don't know, randomly watching let's say I'm watching The Voice or something from last year, and there was a contestant that I really liked, and they happened to have gotten a music career, I have the knowledge to actually be able to contact them, and I have the experience and the title to do it too. So if I really like their music and I really want to talk to them, I can just find out who they work with, and just be like, I'd love to interview you. This is my magazine. These are my stats. Do you want to set anything up? And usually the response is really positive. So from my end, it's usually if I'm really, really enjoying music, and which I often do, and I want to email the band and just learn more about them, I do that. But it's a lot of bands from Montreal and like surrounding areas. When we do a lot of coverage of a certain city, so we do a lot from Montreal, we do a lot from Toronto, we do a weird amount from like the UK and Australia. Oh, wow. Those bands tend to contact us a lot, so that we can cover them, because they know that they'll get some good views on the site.
Wow. Okay, cool.
I have a question that kind of goes with that, if that's okay.
No, it's not okay.
It's not okay. I'm just going to go home then. Thanks for having me on as the guest host. See you later. What I'm wondering is, what appeals to you is something that is suitable for the magazine's demographic? What kind of artists that you think, okay, this is perfect for Confront Magazine to have?
I try really, really hard not to be biased. So at first, I think I was more picky just because we didn't have a lot of staff.
Yeah.
Now we're up to about 20 writers, if I'm not mistaken. About that. And my criteria when I hire them is really based on what kind of music they like, which can sometimes really suck, but the important thing is that I kind of want to cover a lot of different styles of music. So I know that there are certain writers that like a certain kind of music. When somebody sends me, let's say like a band wants to be featured on the magazine, they tend to send some, I don't know, like an EP or a YouTube video or something. So I'll generally listen to it. And if I think that it's something that some of my staff might enjoy, I'll post it for them to pick up as a request.
Okay.
So it's not like there's really any criteria. If it's like a really poorly produced or they seem kind of weird, kind of sketchy, I usually just kind of ignore it, which sucks, but you just kind of have to when you get a lot of emails. And I go through and I try and see based on my staff and what I think that they're going to enjoy.
Okay. So as long as they seem strong and independent and worthy of interview, it doesn't really matter as much the style as long as it can appeal to the audience because they're strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And even like if it's not the best music I've ever heard, I know that sometimes the writers are completely open to new types of music too. So a lot of stuff has really surprised me, but they'll end up picking it up, like some random nobody band from New York, and then one of the writers will want to cover it. So I try really hard to just go through all of my emails, and as long as I'm kind of interested in it, or they seem to have an interesting background story, or they have something good to say, I'll do my best to get their work covered.
Okay, so it's definitely more than just the music.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool, great. So then that means for, if there are any kind of young bands listening, like, you're open to interviewing lesser-known bands, not just established acts.
Exactly. Actually, one of the really cool things since I've started, I get a lot of emails where the bands will outright say, we've noticed that you support a lot of local acts, or we've noticed you support a lot of up-and-coming acts, so we thought we might just send you our work, which I absolutely love, because the bigger musicians, they actually don't get as many views on the website as the smaller ones, just because if you're a small band and you're trying to make it, chances are you're going to help us promote the work.
Right.
That kind of benefits us in return, because obviously we only exist because of people reading the magazine. And like a kind of a weird thing, I guess, but a lot of big musicians don't read their press. So you can spend a lot of time writing something really great about, I don't know, Justin Timberlake, and nobody will ever see it because he doesn't take the time to read it and therefore doesn't share it. So it's definitely a lot more than that, and up-and-coming bands have a lot to say, which is really cool.
So I was curious as to sort of what's the, I guess, like a brief just checklist of things that a young band would want to make sure that they have in order before sending you an email.
Well, they definitely need to include music. The way that I send out the requests, we have a Facebook group because it's literally the easiest way to function. So we have a private Facebook group with all the staff. And once or twice a day, I'll go through my emails and I'll post all of the requests I receive. I'll post where the band wants to be featured. So let's say they send me an email and they say, we'd love to be interviewed. That's the first thing that goes up in my request. They want an interview. I post their music so that they can kind of, the writers can get an idea of what the band sounds like. And honestly, that's it, because the rest we can do the research ourselves. Usually bands include their social media, or they'll give us like a download for their album right off the bat, but I can't share that with my staff. So any kind of actual website, like a Bandcamp or a YouTube video, is really, really helpful.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
I got a bunch more questions. Yeah, I mean, I want to get back to like what you do on the social media side of things, because I kind of forgot for a second that, you know, besides answering, you know, like about probably like 1,000 emails a day, you also run the Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram pages. I almost said MySpace. That I don't think that's
no, not anymore.
No.
Nexopia.
Yeah. The MSN. Is that one of those?
Is that a thing?
I don't think it's a thing anymore.
It'll be a thing.
I feel like there's at least 10 or 20 people that still use MSN.
10 or 20.
They all talk to each other.
So yeah, my question was, we've kind of been talking today about like promoting online, like promoting yourself. And we've been talking about artists more, but I mean, also it applies for yourself running the magazine social media pages. Is there a way that you kind of structure your, let's go with Twitter. Is there a way that you structure your tweets to make it accessible without kind of like alienating people?
Yeah, our Twitter has had a lot of trial and error. We went through a phase where we thought it would be really smart to follow as many people as possible,
yeah,
and then
right.
they'd be like, oh, hey, a magazine, we'll follow them too.
And then you unfollow.
Yeah, but the problem is people realize when you unfollow them. So if you're following people who are really hardcore Twitter, like we went through this like weird phase before I became an editor, where people would tweet the magazine and be like, don't follow Confront because they unfollow. So that was it was overall really terrible. And so I think that's a really terrible marketing strategy. And I think there's definitely other ways to go about that. In terms of actual tweets, it's really the basic things that you would think of for Twitter. So we always @ReplyTheBands. We always try and use hashtags, and honestly, that's it. Like, there's really nothing special that we can do other than that, just because our main goal is to get the band to see the tweet, and if they see it and retweet it, that's where a lot of the promotion comes in.
Right.
Twitter is, like, one of our least helpful social media sites. We just kind of use it because we have, like, a pretty solid following, and bands are pretty good with it, too, but that's definitely not where we get the most views.
What would you call the most useful social media site?
Facebook is weirdly really, really helpful because you can also tag a band on Facebook. So they'll see it on Facebook and a lot of them will share it there. And you also have that really handy share option. So Confront posts something and then you go and you hit share, it'll share right off the Confront page and people will kind of just link them together. So it shows that a lot of views come in from Facebook. And I would say that another really good one is actually Tumblr, just because a lot of really hardcore music people love following Tumblr, and you can just use this like search feature on the side where you can look up a specific hashtag. So you'll look up music or a specific band that you're really enjoying and our article will pop up, and a lot of bands will like reblog and a lot of fans will reblog it. So a lot of views come from there. And if like a fan Tumblr of a specific band sees it and they reblog it, that gets a lot of views too. The idea behind any promotion tactic is that you want the people who actually want to read the article to see it. So no matter what, you're trying to find where the fans of a specific band tend to group together. It might be a fan page, a Facebook group, a forum online, a Tumblr page. It could be anywhere. It's just a question of kind of finding where they are, and for every single article, you need to promote it there.
Mm-hmm. So that actually leads a question to me, because we all have friends, a lot of friends that are musicians, and we all get the mass invites or requests to do whatever. What is the best way for a musician or anyone really to go about finding out where the people are who actually give a shit?
I mean, the truth is, like, I rely on bands to have their own followings. So if if I interview a band and I go and I post it on their Facebook page, my hope is that their Facebook fans will want to read it. And same thing, if they retweet it, I'm hoping that their Twitter followers will click through. Uh-huh. So I don't really know like what it is that a band has to do, but honestly, the amount of spam that I must inflict on my friends is really terrible, just because I'm always sharing stuff from Confront. And I know that bands do that a lot. You send out a lot of invites and stuff like that. But it's honestly the only way these days. It's the only way to survive in the promotion world.
Mm-hmm. I guess that being said, like, there is there like a core group of readers for the magazine, or does it always shift to whatever band you're covering?
Well, that's actually a really interesting question. So you can download these really intense analytics for your website, for any website really, just to kind of see where your views come from, how often people come back and visit. And something that we're really struggling with right now is the loyalty of our readers, which to us is really important, and it's definitely gone up. But when you think about just yourself, when you walk into, let's say, a magazine store and you're browsing the music magazines, you don't always buy the same one just because you like the name of it. I know that for me, when I see a band that I really like on the cover that's being featured, that's why I buy the magazine. So
yeah.
Most magazines don't have a super huge loyal base, just because it's really, really hard to keep everyone interested all the time. It's impossible to make everyone happy every single day. To answer your question, the loyalty of people coming back is not super high. So it's like a daily struggle in terms of views and competition with other local magazines and that kind of thing.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, that is. Interesting. Is it, I guess related to that, you said you have about 20 writers on staff. Do they also write for other magazines, or are they like strictly for yours?
Well, anybody that works for the magazine right now works for free because we don't make money.
Okay.
So I can't really tell you that your writing only belongs to one magazine because I don't pay you for it. So that being said, everybody who becomes a writer, they know that the writing that they do for the magazine is for the magazine only. And unfortunately, their writing belongs to the magazine after they've sent it in. So a lot of photographers especially, they tend to freelance with a lot of different magazines just because it's a really great experience. And I would never tell anybody to not go for the experience. As long as they can keep up the amount of writing that we require, then they're free to do whatever they want, you know?
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So if the magazine doesn't make any money, does that mean this is not your job?
It's not my job.
Oh my God.
No, I feel like
I wish
it was my job. I would do it every single day until I couldn't look at my computer anymore if I was paid to do it.
Wow. So you what? Do all that on top of a job.
Well, yeah, you were actually thinking, like, this yeah, is I actually thing. Do two other jobs and I only get paid for one of them. I'm 23, right? So I can only ask for so much, but I'd like to think that it's like really great experience for down the line.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like the idea is not for the magazine to be free forever. So I mean, hopefully one day I can make money doing it. You know what I mean? It would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Is it on you to try and find a way to make the money for the magazine, or do you have someone that you like report to?
No, well, right now I run the magazine with a really good friend of mine. Actually, the girl who applied for the magazine at the same time as me, we both ended up taking editor-in-chief positions when our actual editor-in-chief stepped down. So we're running the magazine together. So it's not just me. I get to kind of bounce all my ideas off of one of my best friends. And our staff is just like really, really awesome, and they always have ideas. So every few days I'll open my inbox to like some really great new refreshing idea from my staff. And a lot of our best ideas have come from them because they're readers and writers, so they get to see the magazine from lots of perspectives. We all have a lot of ideas. It's just kind of a question of putting them in place and finding the time to actually make money, which time is something I don't really have, unfortunately.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Well, thanks for giving it
yeah,
to us then.
Yeah, okay.
I got one more question just for kicks if I throw it out there. It kind of goes into, just for hits and gigs. Yeah, I had to go for it. This has to correspond a bit with how you said that the longevity of your fan base isn't really something you focus on, because you say that it goes from magazine to magazine because people aren't going for the title. Is that correct?
Well, okay, so I know I said that, and like I know that for me, there are certain magazines that when I see them, I'll want to buy them by nature. But yes, I think as a general rule, it is true that you'll read something for the content and not so much the name, just because there's so many different names out there right now that just sticking to one, chances are you're just missing a lot of other work that's out there.
Okay. And what I did was I went on the site and I looked up the About section and I found something that says that you guys, Confront Magazine maintains, I'm quoting here, Confront Magazine maintains a traditional hard copy feel, but breaks away from the limitations by allowing readers to participate actively in all aspects of the magazine. And I was wondering if you could elaborate on that and how you guys can get the audience to give back to you guys and keep it going.
That's a great question. So when the magazine first started, I want to say that my editor-in-chief, so the person who founded the magazine, she actually offered hard copies of the magazine. When it first started, there was a really strict posting schedule. It was like a very magazine feel. There was a cover every month that went up, and there was like a table of contents and weekly features, blah, 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 which we actually don't have anymore because the amount of content that we put up is like insane. And it's like 8 to 10 pieces a day compared to like 3 pieces a week back in the day, like 5 years ago. Oof. So it doesn't have, I don't think it has that hard copy feel anymore. I actually think that's really outdated, right, which I think is probably really terrible to say in an interview, but it's actually part of the whole, we're kind of changing the way people see the magazine. We've only been editors for, I don't know, I guess technically a year, but I'm going to say officially 8 months. So it's been a lot of building up the content and building up our contacts here in Montreal just to get Confront known so that we can actually cover stuff. And from there, maybe getting that hard copy feel back. I don't know. It's all going to come back when the magazine starts to make money, I think. But right now, I think it's a lot more of a blog kind of feel, which is what we're going for, because the more content, the more people want to come visit.
Yeah, great.
Awesome.
So just before we let you go here, might as well do this. You can have a few minutes to name drop if you'd like. What are some great interviews you've done? Some of your favorite interviews you've been able to do?
Okay, well, I actually did one of my favorite interviews in my whole career. I did it last weekend. I got to interview Fall Out Boy, which a lot of people are kind of like really... Man, they're really hard on Fall Out Boy just because they're one of those like pop punk bands from like the early 2000s and I don't know.
People love to hate stuff.
I don't know, like a lot of people are just really hard on them, but I grew up listening to their music, so they're actually like their media is just absolutely insane. So first of all, getting that interview was amazing. It was a really, really great like feeling in general. And then doing the interview, I interviewed two of them. And the lead singer was one of them, and he's just been one of those musical influences that's followed me throughout my whole life. I think actually it's a Fall Out Boy song that is the reason I started writing when I was like 15 or 16 or something. So getting to interview them and sit down and just have like this really real conversation with the lead singer was one of the coolest experiences in all of my 4 years.
Well, did you tell him that he was the reason that you started writing?
I was actually in too much shock because I was busy being really nervous and trying not to let it show. And because they had a lot of media that day, we had a time limit on the amount of the interview. So the label kind of came in and was like, you have 3 minutes left. I was like, okay. And he turned around and he apologized and told me that he was really sorry. He was talking so much, but he just felt really comfortable around me. And I was just, like, so busy having, like, a complete panic attack on the inside that I couldn't even form any more words after. So, I don't know. Maybe it'll translate in my writing whenever the interview goes up.
Do you find you get nervous anymore from interviewing these acts? Or do you think you developed a thick skin for it or anything like that?
Oh, my. I've definitely developed a thick skin. It's actually really funny because I remember, like, my first interview, which was... At the time, it was Pierce the Veil, who now in the like screamo punk world, I think they're really, really big. But back in the day, like 4 years ago, they were still relatively unknown. And I was so nervous. It was absolutely ridiculous. So, now I go into interviews and I just have so much fun with it. Except if I really, really love the artist, then I get more nervous.
So that interview with Fall Out Boy, do you know when that's going to be going up?
Yeah, it's going to go up on June 15th, actually. It's the next feature on the magazine.
Okay.
Sweet. Wow. Something to look out for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So the website, I mean, it's obvious, but what's the website if people want to be there?
Yes, it's www.confrontmagazine.com. And it gets updated every day, so come by and visit.
Fantastic.
And we can find you guys on Twitter. Is it @confront?
It's @confrontmag, so just confrontmag. And I think that's most of our social media, facebook.com/confrontmag, Tumblr/confrontmag.
Okay, great.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on. This has been a really good conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks a lot, Melissa.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Okay, have a good evening.
Okay, so welcome back to episode 7 of Hits and Gigs. This is the final segment. We had a lot of fun talking to our guests. We spoke to Mara Nesrallah of Mara and the Marigold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was fun.
It was very good. Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to the EP, and I'm going to be at the Toronto shows. I don't think I make it up to Guelph.
No, probably not.
No, I don't know.
But if you want to meet the Hits and Gigs cast in the flesh, come to Mara's show, because fuck, we'll be there.
Meet up.
Yeah.
And then
sign
we
autographs.
Yeah. Hits and gigs. Hits and gigs.
You're on the little table.
There's nobody. then we spoke to Melissa Payette.
I learned a lot from
that. Was great. That was a lot of fun.
She's very well spoken and said a lot of good stuff, I think.
Sure. Yeah. I can see why she is an editor in chief.
No kidding, eh?
Yes, that is a title. Editor in chief.
No kidding. That's pretty damn good on a.
I can't believe how much she does, man. She's editing everybody else's work. She's getting all the emails. The list goes on.
Am I an editor in chief?
She's got two other jobs. Sorry.
Are you an editor in chief? She's got two other jobs.
Am I an editor in chief?
According to my Facebook profile, I'm an editor in chief.
Yeah.
What's the magazine say?
Get a Fucking Clue magazine. It's good.
It's a good magazine.
It's a good publication.
Savvy's also got a blog, a WordPress blog. What's that called?
We're not getting into this.
So guys, as always, Rack, as always on the show, we like to kind of talk about like some shows we've checked out in the last little while to show that we're not just like
hobbits.
Okay.
Hobbits.
Is that the word?
Hermits?
Hermits.
Hobbits.
Hobbits, hermits. Well,
hobbits, show we're not anything. Hobbits, well, no, like... but Tom Bombadil was a hermit.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
but
about.
But he said hobbits.
Yeah, no, but Tom Bombadil was a hobbit, and he is a hermit.
Was he a hobbit?
Yeah.
Well, two different hobbit. Things, right?
I was always confused about the nature of Tom Bombadil.
We also don't have big feet. That's
he's kind of magical.
Yes. Well, Dan's got some big feet. Doesn't have the same
look at
hair.
His feet. They're right in front of me.
Yeah. That your big toe is really gross. It's like large and in charge.
I like it. I'm a big fan of it.
Guys, I think you should cut it off and not be able to balance it anymore.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Your big toe's key for balance, yeah.
Guys, can we start
over? No, I want to know about this fucking big toe shit.
This is now an anatomy podcast.
Yeah. Welcome to...
the unsung hero, the big toe.
Oh my god.
So, are we talking about shows?
Yeah, Dan. Yeah, have you checked out any shows recently?
I've been traveling. I haven't been to anything. I did see, like... I was in, actually, Santiago when I first left for Chile.
A whale's vagina.
Wait, hold on. Sorry. Anatomy podcast name.
What?
Welcome to episode 7 of Buys and Tries.
Ooh, boom. Nice. Okay, so you were in...
I was in Santiago, and we just so happened to, like, stumble into the music school area. There was, like, obviously a music school, because all of a sudden everyone just had instruments. And we had been walking around all day, and we, like, went to sit in this park. And there was just, like, a guy with a really, like, minimalist drum kit. And there was a trumpet, a clarinet, double bass, 2 guitars.
Wow.
And they were just jamming in a circle, and, like, some of just the... awesomest park jams I've ever heard.
What was the kind of music? Could you
pinpoint
it?
I think it was Chilean traditional music, because it was instrumental.
Okay.
And it sounded, it was almost, it was a little bit klezmer-y, actually.
Cool. Like a gypsy kind of thing?
No, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't really know the kind of music. I don't know much about Chilean music, but it sounded very much like they were playing tunes of, like, whatever.
Cool.
The Chilean traditional
music.
Yeah, man.
That's
very cool. Like, they all knew a bunch of tunes that they were kind of playing. So that's what I've seen lately.
Nice.
And it was... really,
yeah, just
good.
Like, you know, like halfway around the world, just some cool stuff, I guess.
Cool. Yeah.
Nice.
Rack, what you got? What you got?
Well, I recently went to see a man named Ravi. I went to see a man. Good man. He's a nice guy.
Music,
so,
Rack.
Said hello.
Music.
Oh, wrong podcast. All right, I went to see a man named Ravi Nampali.
Oh yeah.
Tubla player in the GTA, one of my idols, man. I mean, I love his music. He's a teacher in Humber. I was in his ensemble this year. Certainly learned a lot. And he had this show. I can't remember the name of the venue. Something like Catone. And also I have bad pronunciation, but it's this beautiful venue that wasn't necessarily a bar or anything like that. It was like a gallery, and he had a lot of art around the walls and everything. And his ensemble is called Near East Ensemble. Near East Ensemble.
Clever.
And it's a trio. Ravi himself is Indian, and he plays the tabla. And he has a man named Dimitri, who's
Petzolakis.
I have no idea.
That's totally his last name.
Is it really?
I know who that is. Yeah.
Oh, nice. He's Greek.
Cool.
And then you have Ernie, who plays all these different amazing flutes, and he is of Hungarian descent.
Oh.
And then you had a man named Walid.
Oh yeah.
He came in. He's Sudanese, and you had all these people from different cultures playing together this absolutely beautiful music. And it's a great venue for sitting down and listening.
Nice,
I think it's something really to check out. Check out Ravi Nampali, his band Tassa, and some really good stuff there.
Nice.
And something I've been really getting into these past few months is that kind of music.
It's a lot of really good music in the city, eh?
Yeah.
Oh man.
It's also a lot of bad music in the city, which is a show I went to the other night.
Nice.
How about that?
Segway.
It was the night that D'Angelo was here, and I didn't go to D'Angelo.
D'Angelo?
D'Angelo.
D'Angles.
Because it was like $80 for a ticket or something like that.
Yeah.
Probably worth it though. But I went to it was more just like to hang out.
Sure.
Because it was some like high school friends I hadn't seen in a while.
Mm.
And no, they're cool. They're cool. Savage giving me the face. They're good friends. Like it was a good hang. But we went to the Rivoli. And we saw it's like, hey, check out my boyfriend's band. Oh, cool, that'll be good.
Exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. It's just like, I just want to check out music, right? That's what I want to do. I just want to see music. Good music, bad music. It was like, whatever. It was like indie rock band.
Yeah.
That was like definitely not something that I would go back and see. And there was a $12 cover.
But you're happy you went and saw it, right?
I'm happy I went because it's fine.
Hey man, once I was home, I'll just confess this right now, I decided to watch Twilight. And I was home by myself. I want to know what all the fuss was about. Now I know. Wish, you know, I'm happy I saw it. Piece of garbage. But now it's worth checking out because I want to, because there's like millions of people who actually cared about that. So it's worth checking out for that sake.
Yeah. I read that shit when I was younger.
Wow. Okay. Savik, what have you checked out lately, man?
Man, I've actually been the Hobbit. I've been
the Hermit Hobbit.
I've been the Hermit Hobbit. I've been the guy that's sitting in his house doing nothing.
Do you have any plans to see anything?
Besides
Mara, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Mara.
I'm trying to think if there's anything coming up that I really want to go check out.
I feel like a lot of the music that I'm seeing is just kind of like, hey Noah, check out this cool band that's playing tonight. It's going to be sweet. I'm like, okay, sure, I'll go.
Yeah.
It'll be dope.
Oh, the Jazz Fest is coming up pretty damn quick.
Yo, you know who's here? It's going to be dope. Trombone Shorty.
You serious?
Yes, yeah. I'm so down for Trombone Shorty.
I'm so not down for Trombone
Shorty.
Why? Because I think it's awful.
Have you heard it before?
I've heard it before. He played in Edmonton like 2 years ago.
No one cares about Edmonton.
And I looked him up on YouTube because I was like, because everyone was like, oh, Trombone Shorty's coming down. I was like, who's this guy? And I looked it up and I was like, this is the worst piece of shit.
Oh man, I've checked out some YouTube videos of him and I've loved it.
Dude, it's like, do you watch the show Tremé? Have you heard of this show?
I do know that show, and it's a great show.
He has a character in there. Like, I think the guy who plays Bunk in The Wire.
Yep.
He's supposed to be Trombone Shorty. Yeah.
I think it's just the epitome of like lack of taste and musicality.
Yeah, man. I find that like a lot of these quote unquote big names are like not as good as advertised, especially because. You know, maybe you know them from like.
Are you just segueing, or are you referring to Trombone?
I'm referring to actually someone else, to Roy Hargrove.
I saw him at the same show. I think you're about to talk about.
No, I went. I was in Atina.
I was not in Atina.
I was in Atina last year at the Jazz Fest.
There's one. He was in Toronto a couple years back.
Oh, okay. But he's been bad lately, just because he's had some like drug issues. But like, he just is not good at music, and he shouldn't charge any money.
I don't know if I gotta. You say he's just not good at music. That's a harsh one. I love his stuff.
Still, you love him right now. Still.
Well, when I saw that show, I wasn't necessarily like. You know, in awe of an idol. You know,
okay,
like
maybe we had different experiences because he could like barely pick up his trumpet when he was playing.
Well, that certainly wasn't me. He was certainly high. I think you could tell.
Oh yeah, but definitely.
I mean, the music. I love the albums. I love the work on YouTube and everything.
Yeah. Fuck. Okay. Wow. That was woo. Yeah. He's to each his own.
To each their own.
Well, I definitely have respect for him. Like in the past, like what he's done with like you know Arch Factor.
Sure. Like, and I mean, like you can't really. Get beat around the bush when it comes to if you didn't like the show and it sucked, like you gotta say that.
I didn't like the show, it sucked.
There you go.
Yeah.
Respect.
Yeah. So I think I'm fucking out of things to talk about for this episode.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad we're done.
Rack, thanks for coming up, man. Appreciate it.
Had a great time.
I guess we should give you the opportunity to say if you got anything coming up in terms of your playing.
Oh, okay.
Do you have anything coming up? I mean, you mentioned that
band. Well, I got a few things. I'm in Dan Rougeau's Midcoast. Oh. It's a pretty great band playing post-rock jazz, as I like to call
it. We've been hearing...
There's a category.
What does that mean?
We've been hearing Dan's music throughout the show as well, right?
Nice,
two of Mara's tunes, and then...
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Mid-coast stuff.
It's true. No, I love that band. Yeah. It's a really good time. Dan writes amazing music. And then,
Where are you guys playing? What are you doing?
We're going to do a tour soon? We are going to do a tour in August. We're promoting a record that's coming out, but the closest thing is... it's really just, I just started planning this, the Transact on Saturday, June 29th.
Cool.
Nice.
Might be just Midcoast, might be some other bands, so keep an eye out.
Well, we'll have another show before that, so.
The other thing I'd like to maybe plug is a band I'm in called The Flow.
Yep.
Check out for those on theflow.com for all things The Flow, and it's a great time.
Nice.
It's a really good band.
Okay.
Yeah, people really like that.
So it's a fun band.
Wicked. Okay, cool guys. So that about does it for episode 7.
Thanks for tuning in.